This podcast is sponsored by Sonos. Sonos is offering the listeners of Dungeons & Demogorgons 10% off one order of $2,500 or less for any product on Sonos.com. This offer is available for a limited time only and cannot be combined with other discounts or promotions. Use the promo code STRANGER10, capital STRANGER10 at Sonos.com to receive this offer.
Dustin and Steve arrive at Dustin's house to find the baby Demogorgon has managed to shed its skin and tunnel out of the storm cellar. They decide to bait it into a trap they've set at the old junkyard with the help of Lucas and Max. At night, not one, but a half dozen Demogorgons surround them, and the kids manage to survive only because the monsters are called off elsewhere.
Meanwhile, Will is being studied at the lab, and seems to be losing his memories and personality at an alarming rate. He claims to receive a thought from the shadow monster that is trying to hide from him, a spot on the tunnel map that he thinks may prove to be a vulnerability.
The inscrutable Dr. Paul Reiser dispatches a team of heavily armed men through the tunnel system to find the weakness. They are led to the same bone-ridden chamber that Hopper was recovered from. There they are jumped by the Demogorgons and quickly torn to pieces. As Will tearfully apologizes for leading the men into the trap, he warns that they are coming. The Demogorgons begin to climb the tunnel shaft that leads to the heart of Hawkins' laboratory.
Welcome to Dungeons & Demogorgons, the officially unofficial podcast for Stranger Things on Netflix. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we just watched Season 2, Episode 6, titled Chapter 6, The Spy. What'd you think of this one?
Stranger Things, more like Scrubbing Hopper, am I right?
Well, you're not wrong.
It's a fucking another phenomenal episode that's really challenging me to not watch more. Mm-hmm. What did you think?
Yeah, man, I can't believe how this story continues to unravel in such an engaging way. I think it's because it's still such a big question, like, what is going on? Like, what is the Upside Down?
Right.
What is this creature? What are its powers? I think those are the things that are keeping it engaging right now.
Plus,
unfolding that stuff piece by piece.
And all the mundane stuff, like Steve and Nancy and Jonathan and Dustin and Lucas and Max and what's going on with them and... what's going on with the families. Like, you've got this big cataclysmic stuff, but then you've also got these small personal stakes, and it's kind of a testament to how much we like these characters that we're just as engaged by whether Nancy and Jonathan are going to make a love connection as we are whether, you know, Dustin's going to be able to trap his Demogorgon.
Yeah.
It's pretty nutso, and I'm really digging it.
Mm-hmm. I just noticed for the first time in this episode that they've put Billy and Steve together on the same credits panel, which I thought was a nice touch.
Oh, because, interesting.
Yeah, they
the Kings of Hawkins.
Yeah, they seem to be connected somehow. Although Steve is very much off on his own mission now with Dustin and the guys and the girl at this point.
Yeah, so. And it's like, you know, from Steve's perspective, how can he be intimidated by a guy like Billy when he's gone toe-to-toe with a half dozen Demogorgons?
Yeah, you can't.
Yeah, it's like, okay.
Call me when your face opens up and you try and eat me.
Right. Sick moves on the hardwood, dude, but I've bashed brains out of like two different Demogorgons tonight.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder how they're going to resolve... Because, like, you know, there was a bully subplot with the younger kids in season one that got resolved by broken legs and forced urinations and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I wonder. And then the other thing is, shit, Elle wasn't even in this episode. Hopper tries to reach out to her through the Morse code CB system. He doesn't even know that she's not home. Goddamn. I'm just kind of being blown away by the fact that Elle has been divorced from most of the main plot this entire series, and the show hasn't really missed a beat.
Yeah. They could certainly use her right now,
right?
I
mean, remember we were discussing, like, man, I wonder when Elle will show up. Maybe it'll be episode 2, maybe episode 3, maybe episode 4. Well, she showed up in episode 1, but she's not really shown up.
Yeah.
In episode 6, and I never, like, if you'd asked me when will Elle over under episodes for her to get reunited with the boys, it certainly wouldn't be this far, and there's really no end in sight. There's no natural connection to return her back to the main plot. In fact, we forgot to talk about this last episode. during the psychic flashback she has as she goes through her mother's memory, when her mother busts into the rainbow room where all the special children are being held, it looks like 8 is there.
Yeah.
Little a girl of Indian descent or Pakistan. It's like, I don't know, some sort of pan-Asian culture. And because, you know, what was 11? Like 3 or 4? And that little girl was like 7 or 8. So if 11's 12, 13, 8 could be 18.
Certainly heisting age.
It feels like that. It's prime heisting age.
Yeah.
I feel like that her arc is going to lead her even further. I mean, you know, 8's over there in Pennsylvania. So if she starts pulling on that thread, it's going to lead her even further. Like, maybe 11 just never gets back to the boys this season.
She might not, yeah. And I think I'm okay with that. They've been going really strong with these two separate stories.
Yeah, yeah.
Until they give me a reason to go, man, I really wish Elle and the boys were back together, then I'm fine with it.
Yeah. And I think it's probably, in retrospect, a good decision because Elle would have made a lot of this season easier.
Yeah.
Like, Elle in the bus junkyard at night, shrouded in fog, like, she can snap all those Demogorgons' necks or dispel them to the Shadow Realm or do, like, you know, whereas it's just three little kids and Steve with a fucking rusty nail baseball bat. That's some genuine stakes. Like, I audibly gasped when there was one Demogorgon, then two, and he looks over and there's like 3. I'm like, shit.
Yep.
There's no way Steve can beat all these. And he couldn't have.
No, he couldn't.
It's a damn good thing, like Will apologizes, and it's a damn shame those soldiers had to die, but like, Steve and those kids have been torn to pieces had it not been for Will setting that trap.
Yep.
Now, so did the monster pull one over on him, or was that actually a sense of, because I was weird, up until Will said, oh, I'm sorry, I led them into a trap, I just assumed that as the men got to this sensitive spot, that the Demogorgon recalled, or I'm sorry, the Shadow Monster recalled the Demogorgons to, like, protect itself.
Yeah, I thought so too, but it doesn't appear to be that way, because Will says this was a trap that, that he unknowingly sprung, I guess.
Which, that's the other thing I understand, is why did they need to do that? Why couldn't the Demogorgons just, like, in secret, where no one was watching, popped up and bum rushed the hole and tore up their lab?
Because if somebody was always watching, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah,
they
had
flamethrower guys, and they needed to get the drop on him.
Maybe
with the fog
lead, maybe. Is that all the soldier goons they got? They just got the two military police and all the dudes in the hazmat, so they just cleaned them out?
Yeah, they lost all their goons. What do you do when you lose all your goons?
I'm worried, once again, worried for Hopper, because Hopper's sitting there and, like, is he still wearing surgical scrubs? There's a surgical gown. He's sitting there in surgical gown, and there's nothing but a pane of glass between him and these Demogorgons.
I hope it's at least bulletproof glass, but I don't think it's going to stop him.
I
continue to feel so fucking bad for Will.
Yeah.
Because now not only is he affected and is he being racked with pain at every turn, but now he's affecting his friends.
And
he's going to get them all killed.
The guilt that he's got to feel for all this being, you know, I know he's being manipulated, but still.
Yeah, it got even worse for him this episode.
Do you know who I feel bad for?
Who's that?
Dr. Paul Reiser. I feel like we've unfairly maligned this guy.
We don't know that yet. We don't know that
yet. Every piece of evidence, when he's all alone, like, he's trying real hard to find a way to save the town without killing this boy.
He knows he's being watched.
By the camera?
By
the director of photography for Stranger Things?
By Murray? By Joyce? He knows that it's not time to spring the trap yet.
By director Andrew Stanton? Like, I mean, are you just taking the piss, or do you think?
Of course.
Okay. Well, because I was like, maybe you're just, like, holding truth at all. There's no way Paul Reiser can be a good guy in a 1980s era science fiction flick, which certainly seems like an ironclad theory, but it seems like he's trying his best. If he's evil, it's more of a lazy kind of arrogant.
Yeah.
Well, here's oversight the thing. Than it is an active, like, Dr. Brenner kind of evil.
The only thing that has separated, in my mind, Dr. Brenner from Dr. Evil Paul Reiser is the fact that Dr. Paul Reiser was willing to go into the hole himself.
There's another distinction.
Dr. Brenner, never. Dr. Brenner sends in a guy who gets chewed to pieces.
Although Dr. Brenner did suit up and go to that... he did go to that the garage or shed out back behind
Will's house. Safe. That was safe as can be.
Yeah.
There was no Demogorgon activity there.
He
no
go into the vaginal dimensional gateway for sure.
Yeah. Dr. Paul Reiser will.
So, Murray, at the Murray house.
Okay.
Some chemistry and shared trauma came together, and Nancy and John go to meet at night.
And they do meet. Yeah.
And they've got a new understanding. What does this mean for Steve?
Steve wasn't wrong about Nancy and Jonathan.
Yeah, I think...
He was right on.
Yeah, and the fact that, like... You know, Nancy liked Steve. Steve was the, safe choice? Is that what he said? Is that what Murray said?
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
Yeah. But why did...
He was a jerk about it, not Murray, Steve. Steve was a jerk about it, but he wasn't wrong.
Yeah, right. Well, and then, you know, again, like, Nancy seems like she had to get drunk to get the courage to say it, but she was speaking the truth that night.
Yeah.
I don't know, and that's the thing, like... I still don't know what to think of Jonathan. I kind of don't like Jonathan as much as I like Steve. Like, Steve was cool this episode. He was brave.
Cool.
He's given, trying to help out Dustin with women tips and hair tips, although I do think Dustin's in the right. Like, look, Steve, you've got great hair and good cheekbones and nice stature. Mm-hmm. And that goes a long way to your charisma and confidence.
And a BMW. Man.
Yeah, and you got a BMW. And I just got two front teeth. That's what I'm working with. I got this trill thing that I can do.
And I can guarantee he can follow Steve's instructions to the letter, and his hair is going to look terrible.
It's
going to look worse than it does now because that's just not the hair he has.
Yeah, you got to find the way your hair can look cool, Dustin.
Yes. And it's probably like Justin Timberlake's hair circa 2000.
There you go. Yeah, go with the white boy fro.
Yeah.
But I really like Steve. You get him away from some kind of hormonal situation. He's pretty cool.
He is. Yeah. As Dustin says, he's awesome.
Yeah. There's something about Jonathan that just kind of bugs me. I mean, he's a good guy.
It's his Ray Liotta face. We know.
And his raging cocaine habit. There's something like very passive about him,
but he is a very active player in this, right? He is. A lot of the time, he's the one pushing the plot forward. Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like every time it's always been like Nancy is the one that came up the plot. Nancy's the one that took the Murray. Nancy, you know, like.
Yeah. This season. I'm thinking like last season when they're fighting the Demogorgon, he's all about it.
Yeah. But arguably, if Steve wasn't there at the baseball bat, it would have gone real bad for him.
It might have. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was also his brother at stake. So he cared a little bit more, I think.
What's going on with Will? They do this brain scan and like it's like it looks like all of his brain is being taken over, just nearly 90% of it's been taken over by the shadow monster.
Yeah, I think that's to indicate that this trap is coming, right?
Do you think that Will, because now that Will's proven to lie for the shadow monster, do you think the stuff he was saying about not being able to recognize Bob or the doctor or Jim, that was a play? That was because the thing
maybe,
is like,
but I don't know to what end
the shadow monster doesn't want to get flamethrowed.
Yep.
And it caused doubt and confusion amongst the group by making Will scream and suffer and then seem like he had actual psychic trauma happen to him. I just wonder if this is all a ruse.
Yeah, it's possible.
Because at the end of the episode, Will seemed a lot more Will-like than he had until that point.
Yeah, it kind of released its hold on him.
Yeah. Continue. Yeah, still got heart emoji eyes for Bob.
For Bob.
Bob is really rolling with this new comic book reality that he's living in. You know, it takes like a champ when Will doesn't recognize him. It just seems like he's an island of stability there for Joyce.
Yeah. I don't know. Bob's all right. I've warmed to Bob in these last few episodes.
Today's sponsor is Sonos, the wireless home sound system that fills as many rooms as you want with great sounding music, movies, and television. Sonos has been sponsoring for us for a couple months now. We've got a lot of Sonos gear in our house, and I love it. The one that they sent us, it's literally the one, the Sonos one they sent us to evaluate, is their first foray into the voice activated market. That's it's got full on Amazon Alexa integration. I understand that they're going to eventually get all the others, like Google at Home stuff, working there as well. I also noticed on their website that right now the Sonos system already can integrate with an Amazon Echo device. So you can essentially, the way these things work is you can just say things like, Alexa, play Kendrick Lamar, and it will open up your Spotify account, your Google Play account, and start playing the music. And they've got this awesome little app that makes setup a breeze. You just open the box, plug in the device to a wall outlet, download the app, and then you're pretty much done. Like, I laughed out loud the first time I got these things out and had a fully operational home theater system in like 5 minutes. And it integrates into all your favorite music apps, your favorite podcast apps. It really does it all. And yeah, it's the thing, like, I know some people get frustrated with the personal assistant technology when they're using it in their car or with their cell phone. And I don't know what changes about the form factor. Like, maybe they can put like a giant, like maybe 90% of this structure is a microphone.
There might be a supercomputer in there. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, whatever it is, the difference in its ability to recognize their voice and from a distance is just amazing. I cannot believe how easy it is to use. And
maybe,
like I said,
maybe the messages go straight to the Department of Energy.
I mean,
they decode them.
It's really changed how I do things. Like, when I'm in the morning and I'm getting my bag ready to go, I'll say, you know, hey, Alexa, what's the weather like today? And it'll give me the forecast, or I can ask when the movie times are. And there's just all kind. I'm always finding really cool things. When my hands are busy, like I'm in the kitchen, I can tell it to pause music or go to the next track. And it works like that. So,
And don't think you actually need to have like an Amazon Echo or Dot or anything to use this, because I was a little confused at first. Mm-hmm. It's built in to the Sonos One.
So you just need
the Sonos One to take advantage of that.
Indeed. And the other thing that maybe we should say the most about is how well these things work, as how good they sound.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have the best ear myself, but you can go and read reviews, and everybody talks about how amazing the sound that comes out of these speakers, how full it is, how powerful it is.
Like, I can literally feel the difference when I'm sitting in front of it.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like, I haven't even really cranked these things up.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm afraid that it would destroy my house.
It might.
If I fired up all the Sonos gear I have at once and said, Alexa, turn it to 100%, I got a 90-year-old house. I'd be afraid to see what would happen. It'd be like Marty McFly in front of Doc's speaker set, I'd get blown through the back wall. They're great if you like movies, music, video games, TV with punch. With clarity, check out the Sonos, and now they've got voice activation Sonos One. Jim, what is the deal for Bald Move listeners?
So right now, Sonos is offering the listeners of Dungeons & Demogorgons 10% off one order of $2,500 or less for any product on Sonos.com. The offer is available for a limited time only, cannot be combined with other discounts or promotions. To take advantage of it, go to Sonos.com and use the promo code STRANGER10. It's capital STRANGER10 at Sonos.com to receive the offer. I do want to talk about Max getting back with the group, because, you know, Lucas has, they've been on the outs for a while, and she still wasn't totally on board, but I guess she's coming along for this operation, and now she's back in.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel really shitty that she had to have her skateboard broke in order to get back into the group, but that's how it goes, I guess.
How did the skateboard get broken?
I think Billy broke it.
Why do you think that?
Because it's hard to break a skateboard like that
when you're
a child, yeah.
Okay.
If a grown-ass adult like jumps up on a banister or something and crushes down on it, it might snap. But
right.
I think Billy broke that thing.
Huh.
As punishment for talking to Lucas, right?
Oh,
because he said, you know what happens when you lie.
Huh.
So that's why I think he broke it.
Broke some of her shit.
Yeah. And she's going to be in so much trouble when she gets back home.
Yeah.
So much fucking trouble.
Yeah. We did learn a lot more about her.
Yeah.
So they lived in California. Her dad's still out there.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like she likes her dad, because she said that her mom wanted to move to Indiana to get a fresh start, with Billy's father. So yeah. They're half they're step brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And his brother is very angry about this.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, show me a teenager that's taken from California and moved to northern fucking Indiana. No. That's not.
Trust me.
Yeah,
I speak with some authority.
Speak to that.
It's no good. So parents, if you're thinking about doing this and you live in California right now, don't do it.
Well, young Jim Jones was ripped from San Diego and forced to trek to the cultural wasteland of Mooresville, Indiana. And it's still so angry and bitter.
Your life can turn out okay. And I like to think most of mine has, but it's a hard road to hoe. Like once you tasted 80 degrees year round,
right.
the fires might scare you out. If you're worried about the fires, I understand.
So I don't.
To Indiana, no
fires. I don't know that we're going to find anything more fucked up about this family other than just a standard kind of angst and trauma from a separation and being moved away from your friends and loved ones. And yeah, also the racism that Billy's got somehow.
Yeah.
But I don't, I wonder, you're right. There's big bad things coming for Max and Lucas. Cause it seems like that's the relationship that seems to be budding. Like Dustin is like angry. It's funny too, because Dustin and Lucas are having this private conversation about like, why did Lucas tell and why did Dustin keep Demogorgon away from them? And they say they're cool down there. It looks like they're about to shake, but they're interrupted. But then later that night, Dustin's pretty angry.
Yeah.
At Max and sends Max over to Lucas, and they seem to be the one that's really bonding. So, I mean, who's going to save Lucas and Max from the wrath of Billy?
Is that
where Eleven's going to? Do you think?
I mean,
Steve
could that
can
be the tension here? Is Steve gets in with this group of younger kids and doesn't like how Billy's treating her,
and he stands up? Because I don't. The thing is I don't think that it feels like that Billy just can beat Steve silly. Like, he's just much stronger and bigger than him.
I don't know. I see Steve, like, get down in the dumps every once in a while
and
feel like he's not good enough or something.
Yeah.
And then I see there are, like, two different Steves. There's that Steve, and then there's a Steve who's in, like, Steve mode, awesome Steve mode, and can do shit like
Stone
bash
Cold
a Demogorgon
Steve
as it jumps at him, right?
Like, yeah.
I feel like there are two versions of Steve, and I know Billy can take the one version. I'm not totally sure about the other version.
We need to get Billy down. We need Steve at his most Steveness, and we need to somehow.
We need to see what. Yeah.
We need to depower Billy. Cut his hair, like Samson.
Put sleeves on him.
Put him in a straitjacket so he can't reveal his abs. Then Steve can prevail.
Yep.
This is so. You know, speaking of that bus yard scene, number one. Super cool to go back to that location, because I think that was my favorite location from the first season.
It's great. Yeah.
And the industrial 80s synth music they were playing as the kids were getting their traps all squared away. Just amazing. The soundtrack of this show is so good.
Yeah.
But I don't know what else there's to talk about, because this was this was the shortest recap I had in terms of notes, because it's very action oriented, which is usually easy to recap. And it is, you know, kind of a little bit of a transition episode, which it's an action packed entertaining one. But, you know, whenever you're dealing with a trap, you're essentially delaying something to the next plot point. And, you know, the Hawkins lab's about to be invaded.
Yeah. Speaking of it's a trap, I did like the Mike shouting it's a trap. It's trap. Thought that was a nice shout out to Star Wars, which would have been right around this time, a little bit after this.
Return of the Jedi, are you talking about?
Yeah, maybe a little bit before this.
Yeah, because was Empire 82 and Return of the Jedi 85?
Maybe.
I mean, look, Star Wars ruled the 80s.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
So Return of the Jedi, though, might be a little bit early for Return of the Jedi.
Miss slightly. But yeah,
I'm fucking wrong. 1983. Holy moly. Okay, so
77, 80, and 83.
Totally could be. It's a trap.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. And you pointed out when we were watching that this sonar stuff with all these blips like coming in from every direction looked like the aliens.
And not
thing.
That, but the sound
and
that
the sound
like high
it, yeah.
frequency ping and like, you know, Paul Reiser's like frantically eyes playing over the screen. Like, it's, right. Yeah, I totally got aliens flashback.
I think he's having aliens flashbacks.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't know, man. What are they going to do now that the threat has kind of breached their contamination or their containment of it, rather? What do you do with this town? Do you nuke the fucking town?
I don't know. I don't think so, because as we discussed, without Hawkins, you don't really have a Stranger Thing.
And I don't even know if it would work if they did. This whole thing is underground, right?
Hmm. True. Need some bunker busters?
I guess so.
Need to just nuke it from orbit. Orbit's the only way to be sure.
Yeah.
If only Bill Paxton was still around, he'd know what to do.
I really don't know how they're going to resolve this. It might be something where it remains unresolved at the end of the season.
The other thing is, I'm wondering how Jonathan and Nancy resume the plot, because all the adults are stuck in the lab. Yeah. All the kids are, I don't know where they're at. It seems like that's the thing. It's like the kids all band together, but there's going to be some super friction, because there's a friction between Dustin and Lucas already, and there's going to be massive friction between Steve and Jonathan.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll see, because we've got the last three episode arc that we'll be concluding tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about? Because I have a bit of feedback.
Okay, let's get to feedback.
I braved the mailbag and the forums to try to dig out some nuggets here. Rob from Ohio says, can we talk about how cool it is that Andrew freaking Stan directed two episodes of Stranger Things? I mean, the dude has two Oscars. Considering his only live-action direction was John Carter, I wonder if he's getting his chops ready to attempt to direct another live-action film. The thing about John Carter is that was a giant bomb, but I've heard from everyone who's watched it that it was a pretty good science fiction movie that was poorly marketed, poorly named, and pretty expensive, so it just didn't make its money back. But I'm surprised I haven't seen it yet, because I try to give almost all science fiction a try. But yeah, do you recognize Andrew Stanton?
I didn't, but holy shit, yeah, I've seen a lot of his stuff.
He's
the Pixar guy.
He's
basically
the Pixar guy. Other than I forget the other guy, the John Lasseter. Like he is the A1 guy at Pixar.
All the Toy Stories.
Written and directing Bug's Life, Finding Nemo, Wall-E,
Monsters Inc.
All three Toy Story films, Monster Inc. Like and that's the thing. Like, it's all about telling a story.
Yeah.
And you can do it in live action, you can do it in animation. The only difference is like the medium and the budget. But like, this guy can tell a story, and he is telling the Duffer's Brothers story, telling its ass off.
He sure is.
Michael A., Stranger Things is such a joy to watch. No television show more effectively or efficiently endears its characters to its viewers. That's a good way to say it. Mm-hmm. It's a ruthlessly efficient endearing machine. this is largely unchanged from season one, except the work they've done with Will. During season one, you care far more about Will surviving for how devastating his death would be on Joyce and his fellow AV club members. When the fake body is fished out of the quarry, the emotional punch is seeing his friends crushed and his mom try to cope. But in this season, the Duffer Brothers do a great job of showing how hard it's been for Will to assimilate into his normal life. Between him being teased, his fear when he's temporarily and upside down, his difficulty to restart his familial and friend relationships, I care far more for Will's safety this season, and not because of its effect on other characters. Yeah, it's a more direct cause and effect. Will was a MacGuffin in season one, where now he's a real person and a character in his own right. And like I said, I think it's, we said this in a preview podcast, I think it's pretty smart to make Will such a central character this season, since he got kind of shafted last one.
Yeah, and honestly, like, they didn't do a ton of work up front in this season to really make, to endear Will to us. I think there was enough done, but when you combine it with what was done in season one with the flashbacks with his mom and the kind of feelings we had about him already, it was just enough to get me to the point where, yeah, I care now about whether or not Will is going to survive, or rather whether or not evil Dr. Reiser will kill him in his master plan.
He says, also, I find it ironic that you had an ad for a device that's always listening after episode 3 reminded us of how Hawkins is being eavesdropped on. Yeah, we're kind of doing the NSA's work for us, but on the other hand, don't have to get up from the couch all weekend.
That's true.
So
there's that.
I'm not a terrorist, and I can order pizza from my couch. It's when I do turn a domestic rebel, it's just going to be too easy for him.
Yeah, that's one of the other things I want to talk about. Isn't it
funny? Like all these, like last season, like Hopper turns his fucking house upside down to find the one listening device. Do you know how many listening devices are in my house?
Exactly.
Cell phones, tablets, laptops.
TV, probably.
PlayStations, yeah. Amazon devices, Sonos devices, microwaves, if you believe Kellyanne Conway. Like, they're Jesus. All fucking listening to it. Like, so many Bluetooth devices and...
Yeah, exactly. It was, in the 80s, far more easy to get away with this kind of shit, right? Like, sneaking out of your parents' house or trying to get information out without the government knowing. Nowadays, you're being watched all the time. All the time. If they want to find something out, they will.
It makes me want to revive a debate about privacy, because that's like my thesis is privacy is a battle that we lost like 20 years ago, but nobody, we haven't caught up to that. Because, like, yeah, I mean, like, since what was that movie we watched, the Edward Snowden deals, Snowden? Uh-huh. Like, I know you, like, we started, like, being better about encrypting our emails and encrypting our text messages and our phone calls. But reality, there could be backdoors in any one of these devices, and they're just listening to us talk here in the studio or at home. And, like, how the hell would you even know? Mm-hmm. But I got a blackout marker on my camera
I'm
here.
I'm using a Wi-Fi laptop right now with known vulnerabilities. Like, it's...
But you got a piece of duct tape over your laptop's camera, so...
It doesn't stop the audio, but you're not going to see my fucking face.
All right. Well, see, that's the thing. The NSA's got this new technology where it uses echolocation to build a Daredevil-style 3D model of your dick while you're sitting on the toilet, as long as you're tapping on your cell phone. Those taps are like a bat sonar. Scott F., I'm kind of hoping they leave a bit of the Upside Down a mystery. Personally, I've always thought the Upside Down wasn't always so upside down. In fact, it was no different than our dimension. All the same buildings are there. The only difference is this juicy alien-like organic matter growing everywhere with the atmosphere being poisonous. Since in those humans that we've seen so far, it makes me think that the Demogorgon and the creature we see in the season 2 trailer are one of the many that destroyed the Earth in an alternate dimension. The slug creatures from season 1 are obviously made using human bodies as incubation chambers, as we see the one crawling out of Barb's corpse and we see Will coughing one up. That doesn't bode well for our dimension. So this goes back to the preview podcast. We're talking about what is the Upside Down. Is it a transitional dimension? And he's hypothesizing that it's straight up an alternate dimension of ours that the Demogorgons have already colonized. Are they working their way through the dimensions?
Maybe. I guess it's possible. We don't really have any information to say that one way or another.
Right. I mean, that's the thing about, like, you know, to get Rick and Morty on the podcast a bit. Like, that's the thing about having infinite dimensions is it doesn't matter as much.
Yeah. No.
Like, there's a dimension where I spontaneously combusted as I'm talking this microphone right now. Uh-huh. But, like, I'm not going to lose sleep over it because sorry for that poor son of a bitch. This guy's still talking. Yeah. If it's like there's infinite dimensions and the Demogorgons are colonizing them one by one, like, okay. Tell me when they're approaching my end of infinity, and I'll start to sweat a little bit. So I guess I was hoping to keep it too infinite or mini-dimensional. And, like, there's, like, you know, there's their dimension that's radically different. It's an entirely separate universe. And there's our dimension, and they're trying to push through this. But you could be right, Josh. We'll see. Probably won't see this season. We might see two seasons from now. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the last of our feedback for the second set of 3 episodes. This concludes our marathon for Saturday. We will be back tomorrow for the last 3 episodes.
Yeah.
And a little bit of feedback then.
I'm going to binge them tonight.
Yeah.
Tonight, I'm going to go binge them all. No, I can't do that.
I'm tempted, but I think it would fuck up the podcast. I was super tempted to watch episode 4 last night.
Yeah.
And Cecily was trying to goad me into doing it, but we watched Sleepy Hollow instead.
All right. So. Well, you're going to have to watch something else tonight. Maybe a different Christopher Walken, Scott Van Dien, or Casper Van Dien.
Casper Van Dien, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's many of the Casper.
Johnny Depp.
Yeah, many Casper Walken collaborations over the years. Mm-hmm. I'm sure at least one. all right, that's it. We'll be back tomorrow for the last 3. Send those feedbacks in to strangerthings@baldmove.com. We actually got a decent amount for overall wrap-up thoughts on the forums and in emails, but keep sending them in to strangerthings@baldmove.com. You can participate in the forum threads at forums.baldmove.com. There's one for each episode, so no matter where you're at in your binge, you can get in there and be spoiler-free and contribute to the conversation. And if you want to keep up with this here marathon we're doing, just follow us along on what social media of your choice or follow on baldmove.com. We'll be back tomorrow. See you then.